se prožimajuća božanska osoba od antikonačnog poštovanja. Djeti na našoj Krišnu, jer je on apsolutna istina i prvobitno uzrok svih uzroka stvaranja, održavanja i izvršenja, očitovanja sebe. Izravno je i neizravno svjestan svih očitovanja, a potpuno je neovisan, jer više uzroka od njega nema. On je taj koji je na samom početku prenio vjetsko znanje srce Brahmađija, prvobitnog živog bića. Obmanjuje čak i velike mudrace i polubogove, kao što iluzorni odrazi vode u vatri i zemlje u božištvu umiju ljude. Samo zbog njega, materijalni svemir i privremeno očitovani djelovanje triju guna prirode izgledaju stvarni, iako su nestvarni. Stoga meditiram na njega Šri Krišnu, koji je vječno prisutan u transcendentalnom prebivalištu, zauvijek oslobođen iluzornih priviđenja materijalnog svijeta. Meditiram na njega, jer on je apsolutna istina.
Yesterday we discussed the words Muhyanti Yatsurayaha, by whom even great demigods and sages are bewildered. Now, in this section, this one line, which we just read today, just now, the nature of that illusion is being described. First of all, in this very terse statement, Tejo Vari Mridang Yata, which means like, it just means like fire, water, and earth. So, this needs a little unpacking. Explain it, because it's how do we understand that? What is Maya like? And you say it's like fire, water, and earth, and without explaining, we won't understand what that means. Srila Prabhupada writes, gives the translation. One is bewildered. Yeah, by him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. So how are they placed into illusion? As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Personally, I'm not familiar with, maybe someone else is, representations of water seen in fire. Maybe if you see a big fire, you might have an optical illusion of seeing water, but we're all familiar with the illusion of water seen on land. It's called a mirage. And mirages can take other forms also, but by far the most common seems to be that of seeing water on land where it's not actually there, it's only an appearance of water. It's a common thing on a hot day when you're driving along or walking along, if we're living more naturally. We'll see what appears to be a pool of water on the road. But as we've seen many such mirages before, we usually guess that it's just an illusory representation of water. It's not. There's no actual water there. We are told, I don't have much experience of being in deserts, but we are told that in the desert, the big desert, the famous deserts of the world, Sahara Desert, it's probably the most famous and biggest, that there may appear to be not just water, but a whole oasis, somehow, and the scientists can explain, by refraction of light. There's not just water, but there'll be trees and date palm trees. And one who's going through the desert, experiencing severe heat and wanting water, will see that and go toward it, but as they go toward it, it either moves further away, or when they reach the spot where they thought that they had seen an oasis, they find just more sand There was nothing actually there. So it is an example of how illusion takes place. Now, a very important word here is amrisha. There's the definition here, satyam param dhimahi. We are discussing what is the satyam param, the supreme truth. And here a term is used, amrisha, which Srila Prabhupada translates here as almost factual. I'm saying Srila Prabhupada translates here. Why am I saying that? Because words can be differently, they can be translated differently in different contexts. And even within the same context, the word can be translated differently and they will give a different meaning. So I'm stating how Srila Prabhupada has chosen, or how he was dictated by Krishna to translate this important word in this important verse, although it can be understood in various ways. But Srila Prabhupada's translated as almost factual. Now, amrisha, this word, it's negation of the word mrisha. That's the one of the common ways of forming a negative word in Sanskrit. If a word is there and you place an a in front of it, or if the word begins with a vowel un, and that produces the antonym, or almost antonym. Just like we have the word achara. What is the meaning of achara? Not pickles. No, it means behavior. And by extension, it means good behavior. So anacha means not non-behavior, but bad behavior or wrong behavior. So there's an example. So amrisha. Mrisha means falsity. So not falsity. Now that may seem like a strange definition of truth, because falsity is itself a condition of non-truth. There's no falsity without truth. So amrisha here, it's not false. It's almost factual. But it's not satyam param. It's not the really real thing. It's not the vastava vastu, the entity possessing actual substance, like the mirage. It's called a mirage because it is something. It's not nothing. There is something there, but it's not what it appears to be. By seeing it, we are deluded into considering it to be something which it is not, but it is something. It's mirage. It's not water, but it's an appearance of water. So this is very important for understanding the nature of the material world in relation with the supreme truth, Krishna, who manifests janmadyasya yataha. He manifests this material world. This is the world of illusion. It is, and then we'll find also dhana svena. He's in his own abode. And this material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world, which is fully real. And this material world is real, but it's real in the sense that a mirage is, it's a real mirage, but a mirage is only a representation of something else. So if we see the mirage and we think that this is water, that's an illusion. So this material world is real, but what is it? It's a real illusion. But what is an illusion? It's something unreal. Not exactly. It's an illusion. It's not something which is unreal, but it is, well, at least in this sense, it is imagining something to be what it is not. And that is also the meaning of Maya, that which is not. So here Vyasadeva refutes the theories of the impersonalists. Of course, Shankaracharya, the most famous impersonalist of this Kali Yuga, the towering Acharya of the impersonalists. He wasn't the first impersonalist, of course, even historically. According to our knowledge, his guru was Gaudapad. So this impersonalism, it's always there in human society. It's not something that Shankaracharya invented. It's always there because the material world is a place of illusion of envy of Krishna. And Mayavad is preferred philosophy of persons who are intellectually envious of Krishna, who are not content simply to be envious with Krishna, but want to make a whole philosophy out of it and to express it as the truth. Or sometimes they express that there is no truth. There is no such truth. There is no truth. There is no thing at all. There is no meaning. Everything is Buddhism. It's Shunyavad, empty. Emptiness. What is everything? Empty. No meaning. All meaningless. So under various banners, flags, concepts, theories, there are attempts to describe this material world as false. And the Vaishnava Acharyas also say that. But it is important to understand exactly what we mean when we say it is false. It is false because it is falsely perceived as a place of enjoyment for the jivas. And it is false because it is temporary. So we can't, it's not eternally existing. It's just, it's something like some fireworks in the sky. You see them and they just last for a short time. You can even make a design out of the fire if you some fireworks. So you may see a formation of a star of David, something like that. Six-pointed star. Somehow, I think it's in Western culture, they show stars as just something with a different triangles joined together, but I don't know where they got that idea from. So you may make some design like that with fireworks, but it's gone. Or a dream. That's a common example. We say the dream is false, but during the dream, the dreamer experiences it to be real. But when he wakes up, he thinks, well, that was just a dream, that was false. But in the dream, you may call out with fear, because the experience is real. Or as Srila Prabhupada notes, there may be a seminal ejaculation in the dream. Or one may physically kick in the dream. It's a response of the gross body to that which is perceived subtly within the mind. But another example, you wake up and you're feeling fear from the dream, some nightmare, and you wake up, then you realize, oh, it was only a dream. Oh, okay. It wasn't real. But you were experiencing as it is real. So in the same way, this our experiences in the waking state are also unreal because they're temporary. They're real in as much as we experience them, and that the experience of fear, the experience of elation, the experience of lust, all these various experiences which actually often in the dream state they seem to be more intense than in the waking state, isn't it? Anyone remembers their dreams? Sometimes they seem to be very intense fear. Seems, but then you wake up and then it's back to our day-to-day existence. But that's also temporary. And all I say, a dream, doom, it's just gone. I went to sleep, I had a dream, I woke up, and now it's back to reality. But that reality is also just a... It's difficult for me. Yeah, I did it. Okay. It's also a flick in time. Snapping of the fingers. Just like you may see some you're sitting in a room and you see some bird flying past the window. So just like you see, it's gone. So like that, our whole life, from Brahma's perspective, this life, and you know, we have our hopes, our aspirations, we're doing so many things, we have so many ambitions, so many plans. But from Brahma's perspective, you know, he may look at you and a baby down here, baby just born, Brahma sneezes, he looks again and the same baby is being cremated, 80 years old. In terms of Brahma's time, it's a snapping of the fingers. So this is another example. One example is given here is of a mirage, and there are other examples. Also, I gave that example of the dream, daydream and night dream. It's false. It's not wholly untrue. Therefore, it's almost factual. We can't say it's totally unreal, but it's even our whole existence in this material world, after many, many billions of lifetimes, we may finally think that Vasudeva Saravam Iti. Actually, Krishna's what it's all about. Okay, let me chant Hare Krishna. And then go to Krishna. But even the whole material existence over billions of lifetimes is also, in terms of infinity, it's infinitesimal. Anything measurable compared to infinity, however big that, you can get huge numbers in the Vedic mathematical system, they have huge numbers. We don't have words in English, or maybe the mathematicians have invented them. You know, you're doing the astronomy, so they have they go beyond Koti to Arabud, and then there are what other terms? There are all kinds of terms. Huge numbers. So however big the number is, compared to infinity, it's Vrinda is maybe one of them. Yeah. Hundreds of billions. They have words for it. Because you need it, huh? Yes. You know?
The word Google, the search engine, Google is supposed to mean one with 100 zeros.
Is it?
Yeah. That's how they get
how they got the term. All right, that's interesting. That's a Vedic term? No. Sanskrit term? I don't think so. Doesn't sound like it. Maybe that's a newly invented one. But well, mathematics is in the Western world has been going on since the time of what? Any Pythagoras? Was he the first? Yeah, they say they invented it, but you have in Vedic mathematics all the things, sines, cosines, all trinog, everything. And logarithms also? Do you know about that? They had. Anyway, the point is that however long our material existence may seem, it's just a flash in infinity. So just like that, if you say you're going on the road and you trip and your head spins, giddiness. We've all had that experience, some giddiness. And it seems like the whole world is just going round and round, and then you, or vertigo. You experience that? You get up suddenly, maybe you're sleeping deeply and all of a sudden there's a loud sound and you jump up and then, oh, you feel like you're going to pass out and the whole world seems like it's spinning round and round. And then it settles down, although actually nothing's moving, it just, there's an experience. The world stops spinning. Actually, the world's not spinning, just we say our head is spinning. Actually, our head is not spinning, but it feels like that. And then it settles down, and then you go on with life, whatever you're doing. So, like that, that experience, it just lasts a short time, and then we go on with life, and there's nothing real about it. Just like we say our head is spinning, it's because it seems like that, but actually the head is not spinning. And we say my head has stopped spinning, but it wasn't spinning. You must say that in your language also, right? My head was spinning, but I mean, actually, it's impossible for the head to spin without the rest of the body spinning. Spinning in the head. Uh-huh. All right, but actually, there's nothing spinning in the head either. It's not that your brain is revolving. But it seems like that. It seems like that, and therefore we say it is like that. But actually, it's not that. Not that means Maya. So in the same way, it seems that I am a Britisher. I am married to this is my wife. These are my children. It seems real. And in one sense, it is real. Again, the experience is real, or the forms are real. But they're unreal in as much as they have no permanent existence. They are no constitutional position. There is no, just like I may say my name is John Smith. That is in English the name you use. It's like in Sanskrit Devadatta. It means Mr. Ordinary. It's like the most ordinary name you could imagine, John Smith. So you say this, and that name is identified with a certain body. But that body has no, it constitutionally it doesn't exist. This is another use. It's Tejo Vari Mridang Yata. It is a combination of earth, fire, and water. It is constituted from material nature, and this form, this finger which you now see, you might be eating it, or ingredients of it, or some human being may be eating the ingredients of this finger at some point in time. Because after this body dies and it's either buried and rots away or is burned and the ashes mingle with the earth, and I'm not sure, but I would guess that the ashes of a dead body would make a very good fertilizer. And then if that is, you know, and then the well, usually they wouldn't use it as a fertilizer, but anyway, it'll get mixed with the soil, and then that will transform into cabbages or whatever, and someone may come along and eat it. And some chemicals which were in my finger, some of those chemicals will be in the cabbage. And again, it'll become a human. Those molecules, of course, they'll go undergo, at least the atoms, we could say. Some atoms which were identified with this body, they'll become identified with another body. So, what is real about John Smith? It's just an identity which is a temporary identity, in that which is planted, or it is, what is the word? It is, it's an identity which is identified with. That's not very good. Well, I guess that's what we're trying to say. It's an identity which is identified with that particular body. But that, even that personality of John Smith, that's also not the real person. Neither the body is the person, nor the body exists, except for a flash in time. But even that personality, John Smith, we may say he's a vivacious person. Do you have that word? Vivacious means like outgoing, extroverted, sociable. We may say he's a pretentious person. There may be so many adjectives which can describe John Smith, but in another life he may have another personality, or even in the same life. Sometimes people, they go through like a whole transformation. Someone who's very extroverted becomes very introverted. They have some traumatic experience and then they withdraw. Or by drugs, they can change. I saw my mother, who was a... Now you can understand why I'm crazy, because my mother was crazy, I guess you could call it. That's not a very charitable way of putting it, but it more or less describes the situation. So I used to see her, I used to go visit her in the mental hospital. They probably have a new euphemistic term for it these days, but we used to call them mental hospitals. And you go and see her one week and she'll be all happy, and the next week she'll be all dull, just depending on which drugs they decided to pump her with during the last week. It affects the consciousness temporarily. That's the point. Everything is temporary. So is it real? Yes. Is it real? No. Is this a Buddhist koan? No. It's not. It has symptoms of reality. But if we examine from another perspective, we can say that it's not real. It's real in as much as there is something there. But that something is not substantial. It's neither permanent, nor is it of the nature of reality, because reality is Satchit Anandamay, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. But this, there is something there, but it's not eternal, full of bliss or knowledge. Therefore it's called Asat. This is the term Sat, an important word, means that which is true, that which is real, that which is good. All these terms are covered by the word Sat. And the opposite, Asat, just like Mrisha, Amrisha, the opposite Asat means which is not real, it's not eternal, and it's not good. So that is the nature of our interaction with Maya. Maya is actually not Asat. She is Sat. She is a servant of the Supreme Sat. Satyam. true. Sat, satyam means true. So, Maya herself is not bad, but it's our relationship with her. We make a relationship with Maya instead of directly making our relationship with Krishna. So it's very important to understand the nature of Maya, because misunderstanding of the relation of what is Maya, we may, that's another word which is probably entering the Western vocabulary, isn't it? Maya, at least among trendy people, Buddhists and all this, they may use this word, so-called Buddhists of the Western world. They may use this word Maya. But not understanding what Maya is also Maya. To misunderstand Maya is another form of Maya. So, to properly understand the Param Satya, the Supreme Truth, we have to know also the nature of mithya. What is illusion? We cannot understand what is true without coming out of the untrue. Therefore, it is required to know, as the Ishopanishad said, it is necessary to cultivate knowledge of the real and of illusion. Now, that doesn't mean that when we cultivate knowledge of illusion, that we have to learn all kinds of rubbish things and learn how to be in Maya, but we to learn what is the nature of Maya, how she is connected to the Param Satya, how she affects us and why she affects us. This is very important. Why this is one of those big unanswered questions, or very inadequately answered questions in Western attempts at theology. Why are we suffering in this world? Well, the great answer is because long ago, Adam ate an apple. And that's why there's so much suffering in the world. You know, read the newspaper. Another 200 people bombed to death in Iraq. All the wonderful happenings in Kosovo, and it's all because Adam ate an apple. I mean, this is really poor theology. Not at all convincing. So, Bhagavad Gita gives the essence of it, that Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhuktritve Hituruchyate. The suffering and distress of the living being in the material world is caused by, what is it caused by? Is it caused by God? He threw us here, it's all His fault. If there's anything wrong, blame Him. Jato Dosh Nanda Ghosh, as it said in Bengali. Whatever's wrong, blame it on Nanda Ghosh. Or who's Nanda Ghosh? Well, anyone, doesn't matter. Find someone and blame them. Sadokoba, what is that? There's another funny saying. What is that? Chorko chori, sadoko bande, patikko lagave fanshi, dhanda kali jug, teri tamasha, dukkha lagi or hashi. That means that there's a thief, let him go. There's a sadhu, tie him up. So, well, there's been a crime, someone should be punished. Okay, just grab someone from the street and hang him. This is wonderful Kali Yuga. Teri Tamasha, your show. And now we have the Kali Yuga show. Do 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 do. It's the Kali Yuga show. Have a look in the newspaper. And what do? When we say it, we feel distress, but we laugh also. We don't know whether to laugh or cry. It's so crazy. So where were we in discussing the nature of Maya? I got lost in. Huh? There we are, I'm in Maya. We have to. What is the cause of our suffering? The cause is. Blame it all on God. It's God's fault. He put me here. Or they can put it around the other way. God put us in this world. He put the animals here, so he wanted us to eat them. That's the proof. This world was made by God. I'm in it. Animals are in it. I like to eat animals, so God likes me to eat animals. More wonderful logic. God gave man dominion over the animals. So what is the cause of our suffering? This kind of logic. That's the cause of our suffering. What is the cause? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that we ourselves are the cause of our suffering. We have brought it upon ourselves. There's a story in the Mahabharata, very instructive story, which I've repeated many times, and it's well worth repeating again. How one king in his court, he asked all his ministers, which means the learned brahmanas, this important question, that why do we not give up Maya? This is a common question even today, at least among devotees. Why do we not give up Maya? We're listening all the time, all these classes, and you know, Maya's cause of suffering, and it's not good, and we should give it up, and still we don't give it up. Why? What is the reason? So all the different Brahmins gave their reasons, and there's one older Brahmin who's just sitting there, not saying anything. So they all said what they had to say, and then they looked at him, because he was supposed to be the wisest, and he hadn't said anything. So he was just sitting there, all looking at him. So all of a sudden he got up and ran to the pillar and embraced it and said, "Let me go! Let me go! Let me go!" I thought, oh, he's become senile. So after he finished his little drama, he said, "That's why we don't give up Maya. We're holding on tightly and saying, 'Let me go, let me go, let me go.' We are holding on. But to us, it seems that prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma katam iti manne. We think, I am doing. We want to think that I am doing, but we're controlled by Maya. Why are we controlled by Maya? Because we think I am doing. We don't want to give up that sense of separateness from Krishna. So it's Tri Sargaha, three modes of creation. This is differently understood as three modes of material nature. Can be understood as that. Three phases of creation. Again, this can be analyzed in different ways. There's the creation or the manifestation of the cosmos, of the ingredients of the cosmos. From first Mahavishnu, then Garbhodakshai Vishnu, then Brahma creates, and then everyone is creating. Creation of byproducts. So there are various levels of creation. This is the nature of this material world. It is created, therefore it comes to an end. Vinimaya means back and forth, action and reaction. This mature world is action and reaction. In this way, the material world is scientific analysis is possible in this material world. In the spiritual world, the science won't work because everything works directly according to Krishna's desire. We'll discuss that later today. Dhamna Svena. He exists forever, self-sufficiently, in his own abode. All right, we'll finish there. It's 9 o'clock. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.